Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists and opinion makers that bridge our two worlds. My name is Chad O'Carroll and I'll be your host today. Now today we're joined by TK. He's the author of the widely read Ask a Korean blog. If you don't know about it already, it was set up in 2006 and it's fast approaching its 5-year anniversary. His website quickly shot to popularity and now the blog is getting about 80,000 unique hits per month. And just to give you some context, this makes it one of the most widely read English language blogs to focus on Korean culture. As a result of this popularity, TK has been interviewed in a number of media, including CNN, New York Times, The Economist, and FT. I started my recent conversation with TK by asking him about his background and how he found it settling into the United States, age 16, from South Korea.
Well, my transition personally was probably a little easier than most people, if only because I moved to a particular town in California where I believe, according to the last census, it's something along the lines of 85% Asian American. It's called Cerritos, California. I am almost certain that that has the highest concentration of Asian Americans in the continental U.S. That does make things a little easier. You have your Korean restaurant, you have your Korean supermarkets, and two or three Korean cable television. So that made the transition a little easier, but not by much. Still, I had to learn English. I had to go through my regular public school. I had to try to go to college, and it took a lot of effort on my part in order to learn English, get used to, I guess, American culture.
Yeah. And was it during this time you sort of, the idea of setting this blog came up, or was that later on? What was the sort of motivation for that?
Well, I'd say the closest motivation, the proximate cause really, is the fact that I was very bored when I was finishing my law school in the last year, and I figured, and I was also inspired by a syndicated column called Ask a Mexican.
Right.
It's written by a columnist named Gustavo Arellano. He and I exchanged questions and got each other's questions featured on each other's blog. He's obviously much bigger than I am. He's published two or three books already. But I thought people ask me questions about Korea, and I figured why not? It's something to spend time with. But I would say that my early immigration experience definitely did influence, I guess, put a seed on my head about this, if only because once I got to America, I could not stop noticing things about America that are very different from Korea, and I was trying to make sense of it myself. I was trying to figure it out. Okay, people don't do these things in Korea, but they do these things in America. Why do Koreans do this? I was sort of self-critical in that regard, and afterwards I would start thinking, oh, well, why do Americans do it? And I think this process of thinking about that stuff probably culminated into this blog.
Since moving to the States, how do you keep up with South Korean culture, news, and developments? I guess you have quite a big responsibility now to give as accurate a portrayal as possible of South Korean culture and society. So how do you stay up to date?
That's definitely true. I have to say that I never in my wildest dreams imagined that the New York Times would be interested in what I have to say, for example. So in my more later, more recent postings of mine, I try to take my responsibility a little more seriously, use more reputable source, and try to be more rigorous about the way I write things. But as far as how I get my information, the internet helps, obviously, really tremendously, and it also helps that Korea is a very internet-friendly place where a lot of information, not just the official newsworthy stuff, excuse me, but even the more mundane and everyday life type things are also transmitted over the internet, so that helps. That helps. And I still have a pretty strong social network, the old kind, the fleshy kind, that's still back in Korea, who are well positioned in different points of society, I think.
In terms of like the posts, I've had a bit of a read of your blog and gone through some of the more notable posts, and I think there's a lot, you know, we can learn from about Korea from looking at some of these. Starting off with fan death. You know, this is the notion that a simple fan can kill a man while he's asleep in a room with the windows closed.
In the heat, that's
in
important.
In the heat, this is the important thing. Because, as you described, there is a grain of truth in there. But, I mean, you know, from my background on Korea, I've also heard, you know, stories about blood type and personality, this strong correlation between the two. You know, for an outsider, for someone like me, South Korea seems a very scientific society. But at the same time, there's this contradiction in that some of these kind of far-fetched ideas from a scientific perspective get so much, you know, ground. What do you think is the basis of that?
There are things that Koreans think about scientifically, and there are things that Koreans don't think too much about at all. And it's not that different from, for example, something like the claim in America that red wine is good for your health. It may be true, but at the end of the day, red wine is alcohol, and it can only be so good. So fan death and these blood type things, these are, at the end of the day, these are sort of things that people talk about, quote, things that people talk about. Without thinking too much about it, it's not worth people's while for Korean people to really think hard about it. It's not like economy depends on it. It's not like they're making money off of it.
But just to interrupt, journalists, though, I've seen some of the reports. They'll talk about fan death, you know, as a cause of death, and you know, some in America might think that that's, you know, not a very accurate form of journalism, but because this idea is so mainstream, but it's particular to Korea,
right?
So yeah, they're not thinking about it a lot, but at the same time, it has this.
Well, I would really challenge the idea that a journalist might cover it. Saying that implies more than it should, I think. I would really challenge the idea that fan death is anything more than the page 15 news at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it is very casual. I think there should be a distinction made between the blood type thing and the fan death thing, because fan death has a grain of truth in it, whereas blood type has no grain of truth in it. And Koreans generally recognize this when pressed about it.
Yeah.
You actually pursue them down and ask, do you really, really believe that blood types determine personality? Only middle school girls would buy into that. Whereas fan death, there's a tiny bit of scientific truth to it. So, but even so, putting a gloss of journalists do this, or for example, the Wikipedia article on fan death, which is completely filled with incredulity.
That's where I got that.
talks about quote unquote South Korean government position and quotes from a consumer protection board and one line of a bulletin of a consumer protection board, and talks about it as if the president himself gave a press conference about fan death. It's just not true. And that, to me, just shows failure to keep things in perspective.
Yeah.
You have to understand Korea as a large society with 50 million people in it. There are big opinions, small opinions, there are important things and things that people don't think too hard about.
Yeah.
And the bizarre elements a lot of times come from the smaller things that get distorted out of proportion.
Now, one bizarre thing I read about South Korea a few years ago was of a individual dying of StarCraft. He'd been playing StarCraft so long, which for listeners who don't know, it's a online community-based video game, I guess. I've not actually played
it. It's an online game, yeah.
Yeah. So someone died of it. Now, that, it might be a, there might be a small grain of truth in that, but I don't think this is a case that distorts, because it's true in South Korea there is a real addiction to the internet, to online gaming. You know, PC bangs, as they're colloquially known, they don't exist. Where's this society come from, and why do you think South Koreans have embraced it so much more than Americans?
That's absolutely true. It's more than a grain of truth. It's absolutely true that Koreans have a huge issue with internet addiction, and I think there are two confluencing factors to it. First of all is the fact that South Korea as a society made a very large investment in information technology in the late 90s. They really showed good leadership about it. They recognized the fact that this will be the future and made massive infrastructure investment to it that that frankly other countries did not have the foresight to do. Only a few other countries can match the internet penetration and the speed that Korea has. So that environment enables this, I guess, flourishing society of online gaming. At the same time, and the second factor that contributes to that is after the East Asian financial crisis in 97, that's really a watershed moment that people don't recognize as readily as they should. But after 97 financial crisis, Korean society was put on a fundamentally different track. Previously, it was sort of doing this Japanese-style capitalism where the country was almost like, I would describe it as corporate republic. It's dominated by these huge corporations that form sort of an oligarchy. And these corporations would be in charge of providing for people's welfare. So the employees were rarely fired. They're given free housing. Their children would be given free education. Free education, free healthcare. And there are pockets of Korea that still has this. Like Ulsan, the city, is a perfect example for that. It's such a... that particular city is dominated by Hyundai Heavy Industries. And I think good 70% of that entire city still Hyundai employees. They get employee discounts on almost every facility in the city because Hyundai built those facilities. But in after 97, Korea sort of went. Korea had to go away from that kind of system into a more ruthless, individualistic, and if I dare say it, American. way of capitalism where all of a sudden the individuals are sort of left to fend for themselves. And in some ways that was helpful because Korea got over that East Asian financial crisis relatively quickly, and even during this current financial crisis it's doing quite well, relatively speaking. But the bad part of it is that the people who lose out in the competition, the individuals, are falling over the wayside, and those individuals are pluming the depths of low that has never been seen in Korean society before. Right now, I'm writing a series on suicide rates in Korea, which is Korea's world leader in suicide.
I was just thinking about that because you said modern Korean society is premised on competition at the level unfathomable for most people outside of Korea, and absolutely no mercy is shown to those who lose. Now, this is where is this where suicide is coming from?
Absolutely.
This competitive streak, we have it in StarCraft. People don't want to lose; they want to keep playing until they've got, you know, top of the leaderboard.
Right.
And it emerges in other areas as well. How do you think this came about through the financial crisis?
Right. It did come about through the financial crisis. Basically, Korean economy went from this corporate republic where everybody, as long as you keep working, gets a sort of a privatized welfare system, and moved to an individualistic society that was not, and that process did not happen organically. In the U.S., the process happened over, say, a century, no less than that, because after Great Depression there was a strong call for social welfare. So this system happened over about 70 years, whereas in Korea everything happens faster. In Korea, after financial crisis in 97, it went from this corporate republic into individualized economy in 2 or 3, at most 5 years. And now the call for social welfare program is a big topic in political process now at this moment, because next there's going to be a by-election for Seoul's mayor seat, and the major topic, the election campaign's topic, is about welfare programs for the city, that the city would provide. And next year there will be a presidential election, and it's virtually certain that it'll revolve around what kind of welfare programs that the government can provide. So it took Korea between 10-15 years to get to the point that where they can start talking about the welfare program, which is really a response to an more individualized society. Individualized society, if you're going to have protect the losers of the competition, you have to have individualized government mandated social welfare, and that safety net was absent in Korea for the last decade or a little more, and that results in all kinds of bad things like suicide, like StarCraft reduction. It's not so much the fact that they don't want to lose StarCraft. These people just don't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
And BC bombs are open 24 hours. They're cheap. They're way cheaper than, you know, staying at a hotel.
Yeah.
You can sit there. You can order food. So all you do is play games, order food, and gradually lose your mind.
I was going to ask you about unification, future scenarios, and a few things have come up now from what you've said. You were saying through the financial crisis, South Korea pretty much transmogrified its society from, you know, this social welfare-based group to more individualistic sort of society. And you said, you know, in America that took a far longer time. Does that give us hope, therefore, that when there is unification, North Koreans might be able to adapt quicker? Is this something Korean?
No. No. North Koreans have lived in such a different condition for the last 60, 70 years. And I actually had, in my last visit to Korea, which was past July, I actually had the privilege to meet a few defectors and talk to them. And just the culture shock of these, what the North Korean defectors go through in Korea, is it's staggering.
Yeah.
I would sometimes translate this North Korean blog by this defector. His name is Chu Sung-ha, and he's a graduate from Kim Il-sung University, and then was going on an elite course until he defected. And in South Korea, he's a journalist. Keeps a very, very well-read North Korea blog that gives very good inside perspective. And there are a lot of posts on that blog talking about him trying to adjust to the South Korean life, and it really is not easy for him. It's something as simple as, for example, he would, at first, he had no discernible skill when he first arrived, so he would work as a stock person at E-Mart, which is like Walmart.
Yeah.
And he was given a uniform there, and that uniform to him is the nicest clothes that he's ever owned. It's very high quality, says E-Mart on the chest. So he would later quit that stock job and got an office job later, But he would keep wearing the uniform and show up to the office every day until the boss finally told him, look, we're not Imar, stop wearing that uniform. It's as simple as that. He talks about how it took him, he's been living in South Korea for a little more than a decade now, it took him 6-7 years before he got to a point where he could even drink coffee, for example, because he just could not believe that people can like this. And he just forced himself to drink it because South Koreans drink coffee all the time. And these, the change of pace in South Korea can only make the unification process a little more difficult because South Korea is advancing so quickly, whereas yeah. North Korea is just staying back.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting. We had Andriy Lankov in recently for a podcast.
He's a very good authority to listen to.
Yeah, and he said, you know, people have been saying for ages now that the collapse of the North Korean regime is imminent. And he put it, he said, no, I think it's going to be several decades. Now, that pace of change, we can only anticipate, like we can only guess what South Korea is going to be like in 3 decades' time. North Korea, unfortunately, is in a sort of process of stagnation. Changes are coming, but it's very slow. So we can only imagine that the difference is going to get bigger and bigger. At the same time, he said that in South Korea, young people are becoming less and less concerned about unification. Now, with that point and the fact that South Korea is going to be an even more different place, people might be living 100% online in 3 decades.
They might evolve into a single. They might evolve out of their body and turn into the point of consciousness, living online.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think unification is going to look like with those dynamics?
I personally believe that the unification is coming, although obviously Dr. Lankov is a better authority than I. I'm basing my conclusion based on the news reports I read. And my personal belief is that unification will come in a sudden and unpredictable way. I don't think that there's much that outside forces can do to change North Korea or affect North Korea in too many ways. And North Korea will proceed on its own terms. And that by that I mean that North Korea will try to, you know, get their third generation succession going. Mm-hmm. That might succeed or fail. I'm counting on the fact that it will fail. And when that fails, no one knows what's going to happen. There will be chaos, but no one knows what's going to happen. And unification might come in that scenario, and That's why I say unification will look sudden and unpredictable, and yeah. it will not be a clear result of anything that South Korea or the U.S. did.
Do you know about this? You know, this decreasing desire amongst young South Koreans to even think about unification, absorbing North Korea. It's going to cost a lot. Do you think there's any scope that, say, the North Korean government is still there in two or three decades' time? Is there any chance that this desire to see unification could become so small that it might become impossible?
That's very possible. It's not only very possible but also if North Korean regime does survive for another 30 years, I would say it's almost a certainty that the division will stay as it is, because from the younger generation, I just cannot see. I'm only 30 years old, but people who are attending colleges in Korea now, I really do not see even an attempt to understand North Korea, much less a desire to unify. There's an interesting report about recently there were two attacks from North Korea to South Korea. They sank a naval ship, Cheonan, and they fired artillery shells to Yeongpyeong Island. After that, there was a huge increase of Korean young men volunteering for the Marine Corps. That, to me, signals a younger generation that is more concerned about South Korea's safety and South Korea's interest, that is separate apart from North Korea. Because a typical response from young generation of the 80s would have been blaming the South Korean government, which at that point was a dictatorship, and say, look, South Korean government, you're not democratic, you're being too harsh to North Korea, and North Korea had no choice but to resort to these violent responses, which is exactly the same responses that were given by the more, I guess, in Korea they're known as the progressives, the progressive members who are in their 40s and 50s. They do say that it was the South Korean government's ineptitude that led to these attacks, whereas the younger generation feels that we didn't do anything wrong, and North Korea attacked us unprovoked, and we must respond in kind. And to me, that just signals a mindset that just sees North Korea as a separate country, that no longer shares the destiny, I guess, of the people.
Yeah. Final couple of questions. How important is the U.S. to Korea at the moment?
U.S. is extremely important to Korea.
Why?
U.S. is the most important country to Korea, and there should be no second place to this. There should be no second thoughts about this, about how important America is to Korea, because most importantly, U.S. provides security to South Korea, and I'm not simply talking about the troop presence in Korea. It is really the commitment. How many soldiers are on the ground in Korea matters less than American commitment to Korea that it will provide security in times of contingency. Also, economically, obviously, U.S. is hugely important to Korea. American market is always extremely attractive to every country in the world, and that includes Korea, which is a huge exporter. Culturally, of course, and culturally, U.S. is very, very important to Korea. Like I said earlier, Korea really imagines modernity in the model of America. When Koreans imagine what modernity looks like and what future looks like, they always look to U.S. and to a great, much lesser degree, Japan. So U.S. is really very, very important to Korea.
Okay, so we've asked about how important the U.S. is to Korea. How important is Korea to the U.S.?
See, that's the thing I think it's really underrated about. I think it's really obvious that America is extremely important to Korea, but I do feel that it's very underrated how Korea is important to the U.S. because, and it's two things. First of all, Korea is the most successful nation-building project that U.S. has ever engaged in. And nation-building project gets a bad name around this period in time, but if you remember, once upon a time, 60 years ago, U.S. came to Korea and literally rescued it. And at that time, Korea, for centuries, was dirt poor. Had no traditional democracy, had no experience of being any sort of world power. And 60 years later, here we are now, where Korea is either 12th or 13th largest economy in the world, and legitimate producer of soft power. People are interested in Korea. And in a lot of areas, Korea is at the cutting edge of economy and technology. And without America's help, this never happened. And so there are a lot of lessons that U.S. could learn from this nation building experience and apply going forward as a superpower. And I really don't think there has been a lot of concentrated scholarly effort to understand why this happened, how U.S. was able to pull this off.
It's a good point because, I mean, you'd think it would be a perfect example to cite Afghanistan, Iraq, other nation-building projects.
Right.
Have you got any idea why it's not come up? Because, you know, as you say, it's perfect.
I really don't understand it, honestly. And there were earlier parts during the Bush administration where some administrative officials mentioned Korea. Like, look, we did a good job with Korea. And then immediately the idea was immediately shot down by liberals. And there hasn't been a concentrated scholarly effort otherwise. I don't quite understand why this is happening. And the second reason why Korea is so important to the U.S. is because if we take the Cold War analogy, South Korea could be the way Cuba was for Soviet Union. It is right next to China. And we have a huge troop presence. We as the U.S. has a huge troop presence in Korea, and through Korea, U.S. in a position to influence what goes on in East Asia, which is inevitably going to be hugely influenced by China. And if America takes China seriously as the next superpower, and plenty of Americans do, they can't stop talking about the rise of China. But few Americans, for some reason, stop to think about how important Korea is in terms of dealing with China. Mm-hmm. And I'm not simply talking about the military aspects or geopolitical aspect of it, although that's obviously very, very important. But understanding China as a fast-rising East Asian country is helped a lot by understanding Korea, because China's economic model of this having this authoritarian regime-led economic development through cheap exports and quick industrialization, it's a page out of Japan and Korea's book. And what China will go through politically, socially, culturally, it is presaged in the Korean history of the past. And understanding Korea better will help you understand China better. And in this sense, Korea is also very important.
Very interesting points. Well, thank you very much for taking part in this Korean context interview. Now, if any of our listeners want to go on your blog, what do they do?
They would go to www.askakorean.net.
Okay. Is there any Facebook, Twitter?
There, I do have a Facebook and a Twitter. My Facebook is facebook.com/thekoreanTK, all one word. My Twitter is @AskAKorean. I'll warn now that my Twitter account is entirely in Korean, just to make me justify the fact that I have Twitter and Facebook. I only wanted one social networking thing to take care of.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, TK, and best of luck with your continuing endeavors.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today, and do look forward to you being with us again soon. If you have any questions or comments, then please leave us some feedback on our website. You can find it at keia.podbean.com. That's keia.podbean.com. There's a star system where you can rate the podcast there, or alternatively, you can look us up on iTunes and rate us there or leave a review. Make sure you tell your friends about it, and if you have any suggestions for people to talk to, then do let me know. My email is ocarroll@keia.org. That's ocarroll@keia.org. Thanks for listening and goodbye.